Good evening, fellow Mavs fans. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bow. We are coming to you apparently for the fourth time in five nights as Mavericks play basketball always and forever. Tonight, they lost to the New Orleans Pelicans 129-111. Josh, how are you?
Man, I sent a message earlier. You wanted to give me the night off because I was like, I looked at my phone and I saw there was a Mavs game and I was like, the PG version. I was just like, again? What? They just played. And then I think, you know, Mark Follow or someone tweeted, I think this is like their first 4 and 5 nights in like a million years. It's like Halley's Comet of scheduling quirks. And I think it's only because of the, I can't remember if it's, I'll double check, but I think it's because of the Milwaukee game getting snowed out.
They really look
to avoid the schedule together.
And they look to avoid the NCAA tournament. So they play tonight, they play Wednesday, and then they don't play again until Saturday. So if you know, a rare 2 day off span, which is so funny because the Mavericks came into this one. This was, again, their fourth game in five nights. The Pelicans played this game on Friday against the Rockets where they just lost in like Benny Hill, pathetic, like just derpy. How they even lost is beyond me because they committed 2 turnovers in the final 30 seconds to give the Rockets the game, basically. And they had 2 long days to think about that loss to come in and then beat the crap out of the Mavericks. And, you know, we just let's open up with the good stuff because the Mavericks started off in just hilarious fashion. The starting lineup featuring Ryan Nemhard, Max Christie, Cooper Flagg, Najee Marshall, and PJ Washington playing center opened up the game and proceeded to look like they were going to run the Pelicans right off the floor the same way the Mavericks did against the Cavaliers yesterday afternoon. And I kind of turned my brain off for a bit because I was having some my elder child was being a pain in the butt and kind of missed the second quarter and came back to like, oh no. And what the, like, what in the world happened?
Take a look at Zion Williamson's field goal makes and attempts. That gives you a pretty good idea. Wow. 11 of 13. The Pelicans scored 68 points in the paint this game, and a lot of that started in the second quarter. Or toward the end of the first quarter through the second quarter. The PJ Washington at the 5 opened things up a lot, and I think we talked about, you know, it's small, and the Pelicans can score at the paint. They've got Zion. They've got Jeremiah Fears in terms of like a quick guy who can get to the paint. You know, Derek Queen, although he was kind of, he was a positive on the floor, but he didn't have like a big blow up game. The Pelicans have some guys that can score at the rim, and the Mavericks were small. And yeah, they got bullied. They got bullied in the paint. It was take your pick. It was line drives, uncontested line drives. It was hapless off ball defense. There was nothing there. There was zero resistance in this game, and the Pelicans pretty much got whatever shot they wanted stabilized after the Mavericks' hot start. And the Mavericks didn't play like a terrible offensive game other than the fact that they can't really shoot, but they got the shots they wanted. They just didn't make their shots, and they shot terribly in the paint. Despite them scoring 58 points in the paint themselves, which is hilarious. I mean, some of the numbers in this game, I mean, the Mavericks had 39 fast break points. The Pelicans had 21. If you told someone like, hey, your team scored 21 fast break points and you lost the fast break point battle by 18 points, you'd be like, what the hell? Like,
I'm looking at this and the Mavericks took 104 field goals.
Yes. It was up and down game.
They took 10 fewer, nine fewer field goals than the Pelicans and lost by 18 points. That's kind of hard. Like, the Pelicans didn't shoot the ball great from 3. I mean, they did get to the line almost 3 times as much as the Mavericks, and that's actually
68 points in the paint plus 22 made free throws. It's come on.
Yes, and that really was – well, that, and that's what's funny because that's what the Mavericks used to do. More when the Mavericks
win,
that's what they do to teams, and it just didn't happen tonight. And there's, you know, they didn't, DeJounte Murray didn't play. He was sick with an illness. So this game arguably could have been worse for the Mavericks had he played. This was kind of an entertaining one to watch because in the sense of it felt like a role reversal from last night's game. In the sense that not giving up or not having any defensive chops whatsoever. Like they look like the Cavs in terms of what was happening to the Cavs last night, where I just saw a fair number of putbacks and things were just like, okay, guys, like you're not here tonight. You're out of here.
Fourth and five nights. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were toast. They had nothing on the defensive end. I mean, no one played a good defensive game. I mean, some guys had some good numbers, like Coop had 2 steals and a block. They had 10 steals as a team. They had 3 blocks as a team, which isn't a lot.
Right.
The Pelicans had 12 blocks and 7 steals, which is hilarious. The Mavericks actually shot a bunch in the paint, but they could not finish. They were 21 to 33 in the restricted area, which is below league average.
What happens if you take out Najee Marshall's makes? Like, because Najee seemed to be the only one who was finishing in the paint.
Yeah, I mean, they were 8 of 25 in the paint outside the restricted area, and Najee was responsible for 5 of those 11. So they were what, like 3? They were like 3 of 14 or something in the paint outside of restricted area, outside of Najee. That's not going to get it done.
It's not good.
No, they couldn't make a shot. They got up and down the floor, and they got to the basket, but they couldn't finish, and they had nothing on. They had absolutely nothing on the defensive end. And that's kind of, you know, that's the downside of you want to experiment, play PJ at center. You know, it looks awesome. PJ makes 3 threes in the first quarter, and you're like, this is it. This is the answer. Here's the spacing. This is how you figure it out. And then it's like, oh yeah, you probably need size matters defensively in some aspects. And yeah, they got their asses kicked. And that
and here's the thing I think we got to talk about, just to sort of get out of the way. We've talked about this a few times this season, really a few times since Jason Kidd's been the head coach. We had a kind of an alternate announcing crew tonight. I know you normally don't even have a crew on. Do you remember the guy's name? He was good.
Ted Emmerich.
I enjoyed him
and DFW, Skin together. Sports guy for a while.
Yeah, I enjoyed him and Skin together. And one of the things that home broadcasts do when something is at least to me very obvious, they try to talk around it in a diplomatic way. And they were talking about the refs not calling fouls on Cooper Flagg's behalf because Cooper got destroyed this game physically. Like he was getting hit early and often and simply was not getting calls.
Yeah, and 2 attempts for Cooper tonight, which seems.
Then he ended up like getting hit a lot. Like there was a lot of like really physical play, and I'm not objecting to the physical play. I'm also not objecting to the refs not calling fouls. What I am objecting to is at some point in time, Jason Kidd has to defend a player of his. He just has to. Like Flagg, there were a couple of instances where I was concerned Flagg was going to get hurt because he attacks sort of relentlessly. And if you're getting hit when attacking through the air, like that's when you're vulnerable. Just is. And I really feel like that I've said this before, it's just not going to happen. You know, Chuck Cooperstein gets into it with me on Twitter, the Mavs Radio, voice of the Mavs, where he's, you know, he kind of gives his reasons for why as he understands it, why Kidd doesn't do this. But I think Kidd's going to have to protect Flagg in some way, shape, or form, either post-game through the media, maybe he could be doing it right now, or in-game and making an effort, because there are, like, NBA refs really, really vary in quality. They just do. And that's okay. And bad teams, when they play, tend to get the worst refs. Like that ends up, you know, you want to have your best refs for your higher marquee games. That's just the way stuff works in the NBA and probably in a lot of sports leagues. And I just don't want to see Cooper get hurt because he plays real hard. Same, I have the same concern about Luka. When you attack real hard and if you're never... Luka at least gets these, you know, Luka got plenty of foul calls during his time as a Maverick. Flagg just has some of these games and it's like 1 in every 4 where it feels like the refs are like, all right, we're just not going to call things for him. And I it felt like it colored the parts of that game. It didn't affect the win or loss. Is not what I mean. I just want to see guy. I don't want to see anybody get hurt because of stupid stuff. Like Queen shoved, you know, his former high school teammate into the back onto the ground. Like that's, you know, it's defenseless type stuff. I want to see better from NBA refs when it comes to that sort of thing.
No. Yeah. I mean, he had 17 shots in the paint tonight, like two free throw attempts.
That's bad.
Yeah. That's bad. Like, that's not like, I don't even want to be like a homer or anything like that, but that's not great. And of course the one that everyone's going to talk about is, when it was actually a clean block, but the follow through, he got hit right in the face, like clearly right hit in right face. In the face. And again, you know, there's some, you know, incidental contact kind of rulings there. When a guy gets ball first, it definitely feels like when a player gets ball first, you can kind of do whatever you want after that. And that refs have been pretty consistent with that. But usually when you get hit in the face, that's when they're like, okay, like, you know, maybe you don't call a shooting foul, but you call something else. Like, usually when a guy gets hit in the face, incidentally, it's like flagrant, whatever the least.
Yeah,
less severe flagrant.
More of like a warning to control your body.
Yeah, yeah, like that stuff kind of happens. So yeah, I mean, I like that's the play if you're looking for a moment for kid to be like, what the fuck, and start yelling and stomping and screaming. Like that's probably the play you would do it. And he didn't do it, and he never does it. And it's one of those things where I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where I don't know how much it matters. And it's one of those things where we just wish casting because that's what
I'm wish casting because I want him to that's be different. Fair. I don't expect it. Like I put up a poll on Mavs Moneyball asking if two questions, and it was, you know, do you want this current front office to stay put, and do you want Kidd to be the head coach? And 6 out of 10 respondents, you know, 60% of the respondents for the Jason Kidd question said they wanted him to stay. And so I think, like, as much as I think the Mavericks would actually benefit from like a wholesale, like, let's just start all over, you know, we got picks, we got guy, I don't think it's gonna happen because, you know, business leaders and this you know, ownership group is weak when it comes to making hard choices. And I think Kidd remains, and so it's like, I'm not going to sit here and constantly crow that I want Kidd fired because I don't think that's a realistic expectation. I do want Kidd to change how he does stuff. I think Kidd can change how he does stuff. You know, he is a better coach now than when he was with the Bucks. He just is. He's a better coach. He's not near as crazy. Like that's not a hot take. It's you learn with experience. And I asked Bucks fans, dude, if he ever did this for the Bucks, meaning like defend his players, and they're like, no, he never ever did. So
that might be part of his like kind of him being a legend and a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's part of his thing where it's like, well, you know, just rise above like I did and win a champion, you know, like I remember that old adage with it's like usually like the savant sports players are usually sometimes the worst head coaches because they can't relate. Right. It's harder for them to relate to less talented players that they have to coach, which is usually like most of the, like if Jason Kidd is one of the best point guards of all time, most point guards he coaches are going to be significantly worse than he ever was as a player. And sometimes it's hard for those guys to relate. So, you know, maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but yeah, you're right about like, he has changed and gotten better, because if he was still the same Jason Kidd from Milwaukee and when he was with the Nets, I mean, this organization would be burnt to the ground by after these last couple of seasons.
No, that's true.
If he was acting like a psycho, like he was during those days and during these hard seasons and the Luka trade and then, you know, missing the playoffs with Luka and these last two seasons, like it would be a tire fire right now if he was behaving the same way. So yeah, he has grown, but you know, this is one thing. It's just, you know,
just, well, for all I know, you know, we don't watch post game stuff. He could be saying something right now. You know, you never know. And maybe I will say he at least does battle a little more through the media on these things. But like when coaches talk, you get a couple of bullets in the chamber for certain things as a coach every season. You get you get probably one closed door team meeting. You know, you get one public blow up on a player. You get one, and I'm saying that, you know, if you're a reasonable enough coach, you probably in a good team, you can probably make one comment about the refs that's not going to get you in too much trouble. And I want him to use some of these tools at his disposal. I'm sort of being tongue in cheek here and making things up about what you know the tools at the disposal, but I just would like to see it because I don't want to see something stupid happen where it's like Kit, he's going to the basket and it's in the fourth quarter of a game where the Mavericks were down by 15, but Coop's playing anyways, and he gets destroyed because another team has figured out that they can just, you know, beat the shit out of him because he's not going to get the call. And that's not to say he hasn't gotten calls. Like, there are free throw games this year where you can see it, but by and large, for the amount that he attacks, it's not there. Anyways, let's go to a quick break. Then we'll talk about a few more things. Then everyone can get on with their, I suppose it's Monday. Thanks so much for supporting Mavs Moneyball and Pod Maverick here. If you want to support the show directly, there are three ways you can do so. Is by telling your friends, subscribing to the show, and telling your friends is really, really helpful. Organic growth. This is a fun little weird community we have, and I appreciate the folks who hang out, particularly the folks who message. I got a couple of nice messages after the last game, just, you know, saying, you know, I've not watched in a while, but we're still listening. You guys are the best. Second way to support the show, listen to the ads. That's how Josh and I get paid. The most reasonable way, the third way, is if you want to throw a change at us, there is a couple of links in the show, and you can just give us money directly. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for hanging out. All right, Kirk and Josh back for a few more minutes. Remember to hit that subscribe button. You can also note, like, if you want to come to the show live, if you don't want to listen on a podcast, you go to our YouTube channel. Not only do you subscribe, but I think there's an option where you can sort of notify whenever people go live, and you can do it for every single episode. You don't have to click on the upcoming ones. It'll just let you know on your phone. Come join. We go 15 minutes pretty much after every game. You know, we're in here 15 minutes after the final whistle. And so, all right. So what else should we talk about? Anything of note to you?
I kind of like the Pelican. I don't know. I like the Pelicans roster. Is a weird thing to say. I mean, we're a Mavs podcast, but like I think we said Fears has the goods. Mm-hmm. It feels like. Yeah, go ahead.
Fears was a guy who, before the Mavericks jumped in the lottery, I would hope would have found a way to drop to the Mavericks, because I like guard play.
Fast. Derek Queen's good. He's cooled off. Like, you know, I mean, there are people that were like, the Pelicans won the trade, you know, when they're giving up their unprotected first round pick. I don't know if that's cooled off a little bit, but I mean, they're a weird team because they've got Fears and Queen, and then they've still kind of got the bridge to the old Pelicans of Zion and Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, of like when they were trying to be a playoff team. So they have an interesting offseason ahead of them. Kind of crazy that Jordan Hawkins, like their former first round pick, is now like the garbage time player. And I remember like liking him a lot his rookie season. And then the other thing I noted was it felt like the fourth quarter was the first time the Mavericks like got, I don't want to say got tanky, because they were losing by double digits for already, but that's the first time they've like really emptied out, like played the two ways, played like, you know, their work, quote unquote, worst players. Like they had the lineup of Tyler Smith, Pekaitis?
I don't, we don't know.
We'll never know. Yeah. I was listening to the broadcast, and like every time they said his name, I was like, I have to remember, because that's how you pronounce his name.
Yep.
AJ Johnson like played 12 minutes. So it was like Pekaitis, Johnson, and Smith were all on the floor for like the final 5 minutes of the game. And I was like, wow, this is. And there was a part of me that was like, because this is what a lot of Mavs fans want. Like, they want those guys to be playing like 20 minutes a night, just to basically guarantee that they lose every single game. And it was just a reminder that it was like they are losing a lot of games, and it could look so much worse, because they really haven't gone to those kind of lineups a lot, even when they've lost so many games. Like, they've gone 2-2 in this 4-5 stretch, which is hilarious to go 2-2 in 4-5 after you lose 19 of 22. But like in that 19 of 22 stretch, they were losing games. They were not playing AJ Johnson 12 minutes or John Pekaitis 18 minutes. Like, they were losing with their guys. And it was just a reminder of like, this could get really like, and it probably will, because it's like we're going to get to the last 2 weeks of the season, and they are going to probably start Pekaitis and AJ Johnson and Tyler Smith for a couple games. And just enjoy, you know, if you're still watching, like if you're not watching, obviously you hope they play all these guys 30 minutes a night and they lose. But for those of us that are still watching, we've got what, like two, 3 weeks before the lineups get really, maybe 2 weeks before these lineups get disgusting. Maybe a week.
Like, I don't think they can. They just don't have the players. The two-way availability guys, like they Musa Cisse, they are trying to use like every ounce of his availability. He keeps not playing because they use like kid drastically misunderstood. I just think the Mavericks don't know how to use two ways. That's okay. If you come into the season expect to being like a playoff contender, I get it. But it's just, you know, it happened last year, guys. Come on.
There's going to be a game where they like, there's going to be a moment where they're going to start sitting like PJ and Najee and Pekaitis and AJ Johnson are going to play.
Yeah.
You know, 23 minutes each.
Yeah.
Like in the last 2 weeks of the season. So that's what I'm, that's more like, I get what you mean. Like they kind of have to play everyone because they just kind of have to, but the Chicago game on the last day of the season,
we might not even podcast if it's like what, you know, they're just, so
yeah,
we shall see. Who do they play Wednesday? I think I should know this being a Mavericks podcaster, but alas. Okay, they play the Hawks again, who are on an incredible win streak. The Hawks, let me just see how, like, where they are right now. I want to say the Hawks have won 11 in a row, 10 in a row. So if they, and that's assuming this ESPN standings thing is up to date. Bottom line is they're on double-digit win.
Yeah, they've won 10 in a row.
And so they play the Mavericks, and they're just looking good right now. And I find that to be a little funny because we were earnestly, I was pretty convinced that the Hawks should trade for Anthony Davis. I really actually thought it would help them, and I was wrong. They did not need Anthony Davis.
No, they didn't. No. I think the funniest stat of the season is I saw that the Hawks, before it was after they'd won 9 in a row, someone was like, before they won 9 in a row, they were in 9th place. And mm-hmm. after they had won 9 in a row, they were still in 9th place.
Oh, they're in 8th right now.
That's now they're wild. In 8th after 10 in a row. Like, yeah. Being that part of the standings where you think everything is jumbled together and winning 10 in a row and not jumping is,
well, just hilarious. Goes to show you like how important doing your work early in the NBA season is. Yep. You know, the Mavericks were one of the few teams the last year that after their first 20 games, like didn't make the playoffs. Like historically your first 20 games are very, very predictive. Yeah. Unless you have a major injury or you lose a franchise player. Yeah. So that's why you and I were just like crowing and laughing and just not like laughing in a just more so in a shocked way when the Mavericks started 5-15. Like there's just not, you know, if the Clippers end up, you know, pulling this out, they're probably going to be a play-in, but the Clippers are going to be one of the few historical teams that dig themselves out of a hole. It's just too hard. The seasons, it's too much of a grind, and you get into these, you're probably healthiest as a team coming into the year. And so if you don't start the year early, eventually
take
their toll. Like I've been very critical of the Mavs training staff just because I don't know why everyone is constantly injured. But the bottom line is, you know, if you start the year a mess, it's just so hard to dig yourself out of it. Even health factored in.
Yeah, absolutely. Is the way I'll leave you with this before we go, and I don't want to, we're already at 24 minutes, we don't need to talk much longer, but is the West better, is the East better than the West this season?
I think just this season. Yeah,
that's kind of funny. When was, I honestly can't remember the last time that happened.
Honestly, it's been 1998, and I don't really care what any, I don't care what I listened to Simmons and Tim Legler talked about this, and they're like, well, look at all the injuries that the East has had. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander missed massive amounts of games. Jokic missed a massive amount of the games. Wemby missed a massive amounts of games. The East is better this year because the West bottom is
real bad.
The West has always been better at the extremes. My entire lifetime, always been better at the extremes. Like, do you remember the 50 game, like the 50 win Suns team, or maybe they won 48 games that like didn't make the playoffs way back in the
That was the season the Mavericks made the play. Yeah, the Mavericks made the playoffs. Yeah. They were eighth, and they were what 44 eighth place with 49 wins or something.
I mean, this is it susses itself out over time, but it's like you go into the Eastern Conference, they got 10 teams above 500. The West has 8 teams above 500. So I would say that the East is better, but I don't know.
Because the best maybe two teams in the league, or
I mean, the NBA in the West. Yeah. Drew Shams today, the worst held secret and everyone knew, like, the NBA is expanding, and I can't for the life of me see how. There's just not enough good players. There's not.
I don't know how they're gonna do 82 games with 32.
It's heinous. So. Well, and here I'll just throw this idea at you too, and then we can go. So, my solution to tanking is, if you're gonna have 32 teams, relegate 4 of them every season.
Hell yeah, I'm with you.
Just send them fucking packing. They get to play in the G League for a year if they're gonna be awful. Like, that's my. I don't even know how that would work, but I just there's not enough good players. Like, that's what, when I watch these games, when I watch some of what's going on in the NBA, it's like, there's not enough. The talent delineation, the WNBA has the same problem. Basketball is simply the sport where having the best players matters so much more than other sports. Like, it's anyway. Okay. We'll be back Wednesday, because that'll probably be a fun game. I mean, they played the Hawks pretty well last time. They got smacked, but I like watching the Hawks play basketball. It is really ridiculous, if you start going through and thinking about this, how many Duke forwards we play on a given night, like Jalen Johnson, Paolo Banchero, Jason Tatum, Cooper Flagg. Now it's just like, it's all Duke forwards that are kind of dominating elements of basketball these days. All right, Kirk and Josh somehow made it for 26 minutes. Everybody be good. We will talk to you soon. Go Mavs.